Hello, and welcome to the Mobile User Acquisition Show, a podcast to help you unlock tremendous growth for your app. My name is Shamant Rao. I'm the CEO of the boutique growth marketing firm Rocketship HQ and host of the podcast Mobile User Acquisition Show. In each episode, we feature experts in the field of mobile growth and discuss strategies, tips, and pointers from the leading edge of mobile growth marketing. By the end of each episode, you will have gained actionable and tactical insights that will help you make more informed decisions in your own work around growth. The Mobile User Acquisition Show is produced by Merrill Vincent, Content Marketing Manager at Rocketship HQ.
Our guest today is Natalia Drozd, Marketing and UA Lead at Fabulous. Natalia's previous episode with us has remained one of the most popular ones of all time on our show. In today's episode, Natalia sheds light on the intricacies of user behavior that impacts retention across app categories. She talks about retention profiles and how they impact long-term sustainability of an app's growth. And she dives deep into strategies for optimizing retention for subscription apps. Today's episode is a part of the Retention Club, a series of episodes on retention and re-engagement that we are co-producing along with our friends Addictive. I'm excited to welcome back Natalia Drozd to the Mobile UA Show. Natalia, welcome to the show.
So happy to be back and to have a chance to talk to you, Shamant, about things we all like talking, and hopefully our listeners will enjoy getting and get some interesting insights from this conversation.
Absolutely. I'm excited to have you also just because I've told you this a couple of times, but I think one of your episodes from 2 years ago, 3 years ago, potentially longer, is still one of the most popular on our podcast, and people still call that out. So certainly excited to dive into a completely different topic today in terms of retention and re-engagement, particularly from the lens of subscription apps. Can you talk about the different types of retention profiles and how they impact engagement and user behavior in different app categories?
I'm more than happy to elaborate on this topic. So when I would talk about retention, we have to be sure that it's usually the product field. So marketers in the very narrow form do not really work with retention. However, as we see that more and more teams are becoming more hybrid and more better informed about different parts of the funnel, it's a great thing for people who do media buying activities to be aware of how the whole funnel works. So retention itself is just a word. And what we have to do is to make sense of it and understand what it brings to us as a business, what we can do to improve it, and why we have to improve it, or maybe not. So the most, like when we talk about to product people, especially those who are responsible for activation and retention, we are always talking about user retention in the most narrow sense, which means people who are still active in your product. And then there are different types of retention. It can be measured as daily retention, weekly retention, monthly retention. There are thousands of metrics. We all are very well aware of DAU, MAU, and there are different kind of ratios between them and benchmarks built upon them. But again, metrics without context do not mean much. And to make things even funnier and interesting, when we talk about retention, there is a different way of looking at retention, which is about money. Because on top of just having user retention, we can have subscription retention, and those are not the same things.
Yeah, certainly. And we'll get into all of this, especially because subscription apps have a very unique dynamic, and we will get into subscription retention tech. So talk to us about how, obviously, a lot of people know and understand user retention and subscription retention. Can you talk about how the strategies for optimizing for these two might differ, right? Because these are very different kinds of users. How might you approach them differently?
Everything depends on your niche, on your vertical, and everything depends on your product. So people who are looking for simple answers will hate me because I'm not giving you a simple answer. For example, when you work with products like dating, you must have a lot of daily active users, no matter if they are monetized or not. Because in order for other segment to actually pay is to make sure they have a variety of people they want to meet. Those things are different, but it's very important for a company to actually care about both. Because in some cases, you cannot monetize your app, your product well, if you do not hook people well enough in terms of the usage or some great experiences from your product. So the first thing, how retentions are different, is very, very humane. It's that sometimes people forget to cancel their subscription. And so they still be count, they will be counted as active subscription users, while in fact, your app may be already uninstalled. So depending on what is your need, you will have different questions to ask. For example, you are working for a health and fitness product, and you have a yearly subscription. In that particular case, it's very normal for people to give up on trying to get a good body. And people may have an active subscription and then revisit your product when it's the right time of the year. For example, again, speaking from human psychology and just general experience, people are very excited about working out in January. They are slightly less excited in February. But between March and April, this is when you all start thinking about beach body and getting ready for a beautiful summer. And well, your user may come back into your product because now it's high time for you to actually use and become, build a better and stronger body. So those things are different. So that's just it. Whenever we're having different products and different niches, there are different things, different kinds of retention than you need. Because, for example, if you talk about travel, it's very like classic business school examples. You don't use Airbnb every day, only when you go on vacation or holidays or business trip. On the other hand, when you have hyper-casual games, you use it pretty often for a short period of time. So it doesn't make much sense to actually check the like yearly retention. I don't know people who are using still the same game after a year. I'm still using the same hyper-casual game because I'm still a huge fan of Civilization, but it's a completely different story. So yeah, context matters and your product matters. And depending on your question, my answer will be different.
Yeah, you're right. And I remember a friend of mine saying that, and I'm probably going to butcher his quote. He basically said, you know, the percentage of subscription app users with an active subscription, but users who never log into the app is shockingly high. So these are users who maybe bought an annual subscription, monthly subscription, forgot about it, never log in. Or they bought an annual subscription. They're like, oops, I bought an annual subscription. Let me cancel. But they are counted as active users. They're technically active, but they're not active and happy users, if you will. So I think there's just a lot of nuance to understanding some of this, a lot of this. And speaking of cancellation, there's different ways to improve retention by reducing cancellations. There are some that are, let's just say, dark patterns. Or there are some that are much more legit. Can you talk about some of the strategies for improving retention by reducing cancellations?
Of course. So the first answer is simple. So some people may be happy, but it's hard. Build a good product. Because when you have a good product, you don't have to care about your... But this is, again, simple to say, hard to execute. So now let's go back into a tiny history lesson. So because until iOS 13 release, when you were uninstalling apps on iOS devices, your subscription was still active. And this reason that happened back 4 years ago, if I'm not mistaken, it was 2020 or 2019, it was very tempting to do apps for iOS because even though people were uninstalling their like apps, it was almost impossible to cancel the subscription and there was no intuitive way to do it. Google Play in this regard was way more user-friendly because in the Google Play Store, there was always, like there was, at least for the time I remember, a possibility to go and check your active subscription and cancel it. And also they are sending you an email reminding that, hey, your subscription is about to expire. And again, it's very good from the user perspective, but it is the reason why 5 years ago, way more people were doing apps for iOS primarily, and then only readjusting them to the Android, because it was easier to make money on iOS. But as I said, the things changed when iOS 13 was released. I know that not many people talk about iOS 13 because we were all very much affected of iOS 14 with IDFA depreciation. But yeah, the first earthquake in iOS world happened a year earlier. So this is why now when you have your application and you have a subscription, it's really relatively easy to unsubscribe. This is why for the last 2 years, we are seeing an increased amount of web onboardings and web subscription. So basically anything that makes users pay outside of the Play Store and App Store. And again, this is, we have beautiful example of the Epic Games who are trying to create their own payment system, even though it's not like real subscription, it's a different story, but trying to have direct financial information of your customer without using Google Play or App Store as an intermediary. Of course, they don't want to do that. They don't want to lose their percentage fees. But moreover, it's just harder to unsubscribe on web because it's not a one-tap thing where you click no and it's done. You have to either send an email to complaints at mycompany.com or have a web account where you have to do it. And yeah, sometimes people simply forget. I mean, banking system is getting more and more advanced, so you receive a notification that your money disappears from your account, but it doesn't happen with all the people. So here is a different thing. You may see that more and more startups that use web funnels are targeting older audiences. So people who don't really know how to unsubscribe that easily, because people like millennials and people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s are usually very much digital literate. This is why a lot of companies who are sadly using people's lack of knowledge for their own benefit.
You're right that a lot of active users are just people who just don't know how to unsubscribe. And I actually hadn't thought about the fact that a lot of apps are going to the web to take advantage of this. But you're right. Now that I think about it, that's absolutely right. And with the web-based flows and web-based onboarding and web-based funnels, if you will, how do you recommend that marketers think about and plan and prioritize for these as compared to app-only flows? What are some of the challenges they must be prepared for? Certainly, as you pointed out, the advantage is that the unsubscribes, the cancellations could be much more favorable on the web. But what are some of the other things they should be thinking about?
Before answering your question, I have to make a very clear statement. It's perfectly okay to make web funnels, web onboardings, and web payments. There are beautiful companies like Bubble who do it a lot, and they do it nicely, keeping in mind their users, their behavior, and their journeys. Still, there are smaller companies who sometimes do it not in the best manner. But to be honest, the same is happening on the App Store, where there are some, my favorite ones, of course, are weather apps charging you $300 for 1 week. Of course, it's not the case anymore, but it was always funny to check it. And now when we talk about diversification, if you have an app but you want to acquire paying users on web, there are, of course, challenges. First of all, you need a different skill set because you need developers who know how to build it. Then you need a product manager who can build an onboarding, or you become the person who built the web onboarding and the web payment paid. Three, you need to know how to work with a payment processor because it's not Apple or Google who deal with your payments, but it's rather a different way of selecting your payment processor, no matter if how big or small it is, but it's also not one-tap thing to do. So it's technical setup. Secondly, it's basically the product itself, because we should treat the onboarding and the payment page as a separate experience, and it may be different from the one you have on your app. We all know that building on web is slightly harder because of different devices, how people can use it. So it actually really has to be nice and beautiful. On top of that, it's not all the challenges that you have, because the other challenge is acquisition itself, because you will have to run different types of campaigns. Whenever you're running any paid campaigns, whether you run app campaigns or web campaigns, you're entering different auctions. Because whenever you have a pure app auction, that you're only competing with other applications, right? But web is actually way bigger, and you are competing with large e-com companies or something else which has a different paycheck, and the auction type is really different. Other thing is that not all people like web onboarding. Some people prefer to do the app onboarding itself just because it's more trustworthy and people are becoming slightly more aware and afraid of leaving their credit card details on unknown sources. So it's not a magic stick that's going to solve your problems, but it's definitely a good way forward to diversify, because we as managers, as marketers, always have to manage the risks. And if at some point Google decide to change the fee from like 30% to 50%, you need to find a way how to deal with it. Or the same happens with Apple. They suddenly decide to, for example, to make all the products free. I don't know. Maybe they can, because it's Apple. It's trillion-dollar companies who are shaping the industry. And diversification of your risk is always a good strategy. But it should always be executed properly. And this is why if your team does not have enough resources, you just have to be very careful with the strategy, choose the amount of bandwidth you have, because it's better to do a proper app execution rather than having a low quality app funnel that breaks every now and then, because it's also bad for the image of your company as a whole.
The way you described it, you're very right that it's very effort intensive. And I think something I noticed is that a lot of companies underestimate the kind of complexity and effort that a web-based funnel takes. I think there's a conception that they can just set up a landing page and that is it, or have a 5-question quiz and that is it. It's, as you rightly described, it's not nearly as easy. It can be a high reward initiative, but it's also very high effort. That's something I think people should be mindful of just from everything you're describing. For re-engagement campaigns, what are some of the common ways you recommend segmenting users in order to target them in these types of campaigns?
Beautiful word, retention, and different types of users. There are active users. And again, the way you define active users can be different. I've seen at least 5 different definitions of active users, and they are all legit. So I highly recommend you going to your product manager or your like a CPO or somebody who is responsible for the product and ask, what is our specific definition that we are using? Because when you have a user and you see that the user is not active, there are many things that can happen, at least 2. 1, they delete the app. 2, they do not delete the app, so the app is on their device, but it's not active. Based on that reason, we can, for example, if the app is still on the device and we have a push notification on, we can bring people back using notification, and it's up to us to decide which kind of notifications we're going to use, some kind of welcome back, some kind of discounts or whatever. It's not a topic. If we don't have a notification because the app is uninstalled, but we have their email, well, we could use emails. It's a relatively cheap, but it's not free, but it's way cheaper means of communication. The same applies to mobile messaging, but I don't think many people do it this way. But if you're desperate, if you really need your users back, maybe that's the way forward. What is a way more common way of talking to people, communicating to people, is of course using re-engagement campaigns, but it's not that easy these days. It's still possible to do it on Android because, bless God, IDFAs are still in here. Oh, not IDFAs, Google Ad IDs, but well, you name it. But on iOS, it's not a post. So again, thank you iOS 14 for making our life way more fun, because it's not that easy that you can run a re-engagement campaign of people who, for example, had trial but did not convert to paying subscriptions, so you have a separate campaign for them to offer a better price. The other thing is, if you're a startup, it's very hard for you to run a re-engagement campaign because very likely you're going to stuck in small sample sizes. And any MarTech companies, any large companies like Facebook, Snapchat, or you name it, they don't like small sample sizes because there are very little amount of options that you can actually enter. This is why it's not that cheap to do these kind of re-engagement campaigns. But iOS, Well, it's a different story. No VDFA, no re-engagement. This is why we can say that all our ad campaigns in some sort are already re-engagement, because there are going to be people who are actually reinstalling your app after seeing your ad, and even though you were not initially targeting them.
Certainly, certainly. There's just no way to exclude them very clearly. And with Advantage Plus, you can technically exclude some people on Advantage Plus. It's not watertight, because if Apple is just not giving the enough user data, it's not helpful. UAC, it is never possible to exclude anybody. And we just have to live with that on iOS. Although I would say, I know some companies that have done retargeting with just opted-in users on iOS. But I think you also pointed out you can't do it with small sizes of audiences. So you do need to have a fairly big user base in order to retarget opted-in users. But also just even on Android, you do need a relatively large size of users to be able to do that. But if you do, I think there are ways to make it work. But I think you need to have certain criteria in place, I suppose.
I do believe that anything we do, we have to ask ourselves, why do we do this? And is it the best way to reach our goal? If we have a super great deal, for example, our product has been completely revamped with new onboarding, better pricing, then I would even send emails. I will even send pigeons to our former users.
Yeah.
Because we know they had a problem.
Yeah.
And now we have a better solution. So technically, or hypothetically, they can be better monetized. But if you just have a marketing budget, and if you're deciding whether to do a risky influencer campaign or to run a re-engagement campaign, but you do not really have a strong deal, or something, nothing has really changed in your app or game, is it really the best way to increase your user base and increase revenue? Because again, we are all in business, and the main goal is to increase the financial value of your company. And it's not always about just spending on every type of campaigns possible, but rather finding the best channel mix for specifically your case.
Sure. What if the deal or offer is an incentive? Or if it's just like, get 30% off, get the free clients, do you think that's generally effective as compared to, here's a new level, here's a new cool feature in the app? I'm curious if you have thoughts on incentives, monetary or in-game currency incentives, versus actual features that are new.
So firstly, again, super honest disclosure, I do not know a lot about re-engagement campaigns because I haven't run them recently. The best way of running re-engagement for me, when I was doing this, was about loss aversion, that you are missing out of something. Because people don't really care about features. People care about excitement and news or something, or financial gain. But with financial gain, you are attracting a very specific audience, which has very specific pricing elasticity. So it's not always people who need your product. It's for the people who want discounts, no matter if they want it or not. So we have to be very specific of how you work with them. You can do it properly, but it's not exactly the audience that you want to have if you're building a long-term and successful product. So anything regarding mystery or creating this anticipation feeling was actually working pretty well. If you work in apps and you want to see some interesting re-engagement tactics and techniques, I highly recommend checking what dating apps are doing. Why?
Sure.
Because the nature of dating apps is hyper-seasonal. First of all, people usually use dating apps for a very short period of time. They find somebody, they delete the app, they go for a date, they realize whether they want to be seeing each other or not, and then they very likely reinstall the app. And they can either install the same one or go for a different one. So again, it's super important to be always on, always active. Like, hey, we have that many people around you. Please come back. We are here for you. So tempting stuff. When you work for fitness, it's better to actually do it maybe with emails, because people do not really want always to get notifications about daily workouts if they don't do it because they feel bad. And something very encouraging or welcoming, like, I know you haven't been using our app, but let's give it a fresh start this March. Or it's not too late to start loving your body, start loving yourself today. Every channel has its own use case, and
sure.
it usually works.
In terms of putting pressure in a subtle, funny way, I really love Duolingo. They're like, you did not come back today. It's kind of passive aggressive, but kind of funny.
Oh, they are very good at having their own tone of voice, which is very different from other companies. Everyone talks about gamification these days, and they are always chosen as like a beautiful example, and I cannot agree more that they are doing a great job. But actually, I'm giving a shout out to a different company, Drops, and I'm because I'm using their app for learning French. So great job. They also have the streak feature. Streak feature is something that makes people just like, I don't want to lose it. Please, I have a date.
Loss aversion, right?
Oh, yeah,
That's a big
exactly.
Example. This has been very instructive as it is every time I get to talk to you. This is a good place for us to perhaps wrap up. But before we do that, can you tell folks how they can find out more about you and everything you do?
LinkedIn is the best place to find me. I'm always very happy to do a knowledge sharing session or to answer any interesting questions or solve different cases. So I'm always very happy to talk about marketing because that's something I'm really passionate about.
Excellent. Thank you again for being on the show, Nat.
Thank you, Shimans, for inviting me. And I hope you guys really find something interesting or insightful. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the Mobile User Acquisition Show. If any of this was helpful or instructive, I would love for you to leave us a review or rating on iTunes, Stitcher, Overcast, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast fix. This podcast takes a ton of time, effort, and love to produce, and I deeply value every review and every piece of feedback that you share.